and newly asked questions.
And then there is also another obligatory fast, number 6, fasting which becomes obligatory because of either another or a pledge or a vow, okay, or a qasam, oath, okay. If, for example, you undertake, if you make a vow saying that, okay, if a certain wish is granted or fulfilled, then I'm going to observe fast for 3 days. I'm going to observe fast on let's say, on the 15th of Shaban or so and so, okay. If your wish is fulfilled, then it becomes obligatory for you to observe fast. So this is number 6.
Right.
And of course, there is also another obligatory fast, the qada fast, which becomes obligatory on the eldest son, not on the eldest child, okay? Because the eldest child might be a girl.
Yes.
Okay? So if a person has got a son and he is the eldest son, of course, he has to give the qada of the of his father's fast. Okay.
If the eldest son
is
not a proper, for example, person and does not observe, for example, the Islamic laws, can it be in fact transferred or shifted to the second eldest son?
The obligation can never be transferred to a second person or to a third person. Okay. In all cases, it is his duty. It is his duty to observe fast. In the event that he does not fulfill the fast, other children can also volunteer themselves to
as a precaution. Can they?
All the children, whether they are male or female, they can undertake to observe fast on behalf of their deceased father.
Okay.
And if they have mother and she has got also some missed fast or some missed prayers,
yes,
it is very much recommended. It's highly recommended for the children to undertake this responsibility and to observe prayer, offer prayer and observe fast on her behalf as well.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, Sheikh Tawi, thank you very much for enlightening these questions and giving us and the dear audience the answers appropriate. When is it forbidden to observe fast or fasting?
Well, there are a number of occasions on which fasting is forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
To name a few, I would say that fasting is forbidden on the day of Eid al-Fitr. That is clear. Everybody knows that fasting is not permissible on the day when all Muslims are celebrating Eid and you are fasting. That's forbidden.
But some countries, as you know, celebrate Eid al-Fitr, in fact, for a couple of days, sometimes in a row.
Of course.
But you're saying, in fact, I think applies only to the first the genuine Eid al-Fitr, right?
Yeah, you're right. Now, we have one day as Eid, okay?
Yes.
And that's the day. We do not have Eid days, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Of course, people celebrate the Eid day for 3-4 days or even for 10 days in some countries, okay?
Yes.
True. But there's only one day which is called, according to Islamic Sharia, as the day of Eid, Eid al-Fitr, okay? And on that day, of course,
it's
fasting
forbidden
is not permissible. Also, fasting is not is not permissible. It is haram to fast on the day of Eid al-Adha, okay? That's the second Eid, which comes 2 months after the first Eid, okay?
Yes.
Eid al-Adha is the same Eid al-Qurban, because
in some countries, they call it Indians,
subcontinent, Shia, Persians, they call it Eid al-Qurban, but the Arabs, they call it Eid al-Adha. And of course, fasting is obligatory on the last day, is haram on the last day of Sha'ban, when a person intends to observe that day as the first day of Ramadan, okay? When it is, in fact, the last day of Sha'ban, and you are not sure that it is the first day of Ramadan, you observe fast on that day with that same intention, the same niyyah, that it is going to be the first day of Ramadan. That's absolutely forbidden.
Okay.
And of course, there are a number of other
let's
occasions.
Leave it, if you like.
Yes.
Let's leave it up to the next programs or upcoming programs. Thank you very much. There are many more questions that I hopefully, and God willing, will ask you in the next episodes to come. Thank you very much for accepting our offer and coming to the studio and shedding some light on these questions related to this special holy month of Ramadan. If there is a cream of the crop for everything, if there is a bride for everything, I guess that Ramadan is the cream of the crop, the bride of all months that there are to it in these 12 months. So please keep us in your du'as, especially in this holy month. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu kutiba alaykumus.
O you have faith, prescribed for you is fasting as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary.
رمضان زمان الحسنات
رمضان زمان البركات رمضان زمان الحسنات رمضان زمان البركات
رمضان مجال الصلوات تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
رمضان مجال الصلوات تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa bihi nasta'in. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Salamun alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyah. We have been discussing the seventh supplication of this prayer manual, and that is on Imam Sajjad alayhi salam's dua during incidents of sorrow, painful occasions, and intense grief. We were discussing verse number 9, where Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam asks Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala not to preoccupy him
to worry from observing his obligations and acting according to his tradition. And we mentioned what was essential. Inshallah, we can even try to reflect more and gain more pearls from this beautiful supplication of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Thereafter, Imam in the next verse says,
فَقَدْ ضِقْتُ لِمَا نَزَلَ بِي يَا رَبِّ ذَرْغَى وَامْتَلَأْتُ بِحَمْلِ مَا حَدَثَ عَلَيَّ هَمَّا وَأَنْتَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَى كَشْفِ مَا مُنِيتُ بِهِ ودفع ما وقعت فيه فافعل بي ذلك وإن لم أستوجبه منك يا ذا العرش العظيم
فقد ضقت لما نزل بي يا ربي ذرعا وامتلأت بحمل ما حدث علي همّا وأنت القادر على كشف ما منيت به ودفع ما وقعت فيه فافعل بي ذلك وإن لم أستوجبه منك يا ذا العرش العظيم. The translation of which is, indeed, my capacity has been straitened, my Lord, due to what has befallen me, and I am filled with worry by caring what has happened to me, while you have the power to remove what has afflicted me and to repel that into which I have fallen. So do that for me, though I merit it not from you, O possessor of the mighty throne. Here, obviously, there are different discussions we can make and we can try to reflect upon. But let's look at phrase by phrase, as has been our method. فَقَدْ ضِقْتُ لِمَا نَزَلَ بِي يَا رَبِّي ذَرْعًا. That means, indeed, my capacity has been straightened and narrowed down. Straightened here means to narrow down. So, indeed, my capacity has been straightened, my Lord, due to what has befallen me. Now, here, some lexicographers like Jauhari translates the phrase, for example, ضِقْتَ بِالْأَمْرِ ذَرْعًا, which means لَمْ تُطِقْهُ. That means that, you know, you are not able to bear it. When we say, you see, this is an expression whereby the human being says that, O Allah, because of what has transpired on me, or because of what has befallen me, my capacity has been straightened, it has become narrow, I cannot bear the situation, and so on. Now here, there is a very beautiful thing that we must understand, and that is, you see, when we talk of فَقَدْ ضِقْتُ لِمَا نَزَلَ بِي يَا رَبِّي ذَرْعًا, my capacity has been straightened. Capacity is in different forms and in different levels. Sometimes the capacity is a physical capacity, and sometimes it is a spiritual capacity. Here, apparently, we are talking of the spiritual capacity of a person, that a person, due to what has befallen him, becomes constricted, and not only that, his capacity is narrowed down. Now, when we talk of capacity being narrowed down, it is not a small thing. It is not only a kind of constriction of the heart. It is not qabd, as we say, which is the opposite of bast. This situation is that your capacity narrows down due to the actions that you have done, and because of those actions, the reactions and the corollaries and the events that ensue after that, that makes your situation such that it narrows down your capacity. For example, due to a lot of sin, a calamity befalls you in such a way that you cannot remember. That is one of the worst calamities a person can get, especially we tangibly see this in old people, when they cannot remember in such a way that they cannot remember even their own offsprings, even their own children who are near them. That is one of the worst adversities a person, especially when it comes to the person's honor in this world, is concerned. This is one thing that happens because of a person's own deeds.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Obviously, it should not be misconceived that, you know, everyone who is facing these problems is due to the sins and the problems that they have created for themselves. It can be other reasons, but you will find that one of the reasons for this is the sins and the way of life that a person has had. Of course, there are people, the great people, who due to the physical makeup and the genetic makeup and other reasons, they have failures and they have problems, and they were virtuous people, and therefore this is something that comes about because of old age, as a person becomes old. And sometimes the calamity is imposed on a person. He is not the person who performed the problems himself. He did not have a bad life. He had a good life, but due to the jealousy of another person, this was imposed on him. Obviously, such a person gets a lot of ajr and a lot of reward because of the patience he will be having up to the end of his life if this problem cannot be rectified. But we also should understand that there are a number of people, due to the style of life that they had, they lose their senses, they lose their capacities. You'll find in a very early age, whereas there are other people at a later age, they lose their capacities. These people, due to the way of their lifestyle and due to the sins they have committed, due to the problems they have created and so on, they suffer and the calamities come about. And therefore, this is a kind of constriction of their capacities that they have. You have to also take care of your decisions. When you sleep, when you eat, how much you eat, whom do you meet, what kind of friends do you have, how do you spend your time, all these. If a person does not take care of that, then eventually that state of constriction or the state of narrowing of the capacities will come about naturally. And that is when a person is afflicted with problems. And when a person is afflicted with problems is when he asks Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Obviously, it can also be perhaps when we say, فَقَدْ دِقْتُ لِمَا نَزَلَ بِي يَا رَبِّي ذَرْعًا. Indeed, my capacity has been straightened, my Lord, due to what has befallen me. Perhaps Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is trying to say the state of constriction of the heart. But apparently, you find that the verse talks of something of a higher level, a level which is really disturbing. And sometimes it can be not that the person is, has lost his memory or his way of reflection and all this. All these are proper because he utilized his life properly. The thing is that spiritually he cannot do what he is supposed to do. For example, if he is told that at least during the 24 hours, perform the 2 raka'as, that is after Salatul Isha, as the supererogatory prayer, or perform some good deeds like give sadaqah and all that. You find the person doesn't have the capacity because he himself says, no, I don't have money, for example. And why should I recite the supererogatory prayers because it is not compulsory on me, and so on. He tries to take out reasons. This person's capacity is narrowed down. It doesn't mean that it cannot widen, no. Unless the person's capacity is not beyond that, and that is another subject. So inshallah, we will continue with our discussion. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa sallallahu ala Muhammad وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را.
The Light.
Hello and welcome back to The Light. People in Britain are marking the easing of lockdowns implemented to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Words like freedom, hope, family, reunion and relief have been projected on the walls of the UK's most iconic landmarks, as well as shops and department stores to show people's feelings. A British company commissioned a survey to find the words that best summed up people's feeling after months of lockdown began to be lifted on Monday. Those celebrating the event say reunion is the word that can best express their feelings.
The most powerful word in there for me is reunion. We've all been apart from each other, friends, loved ones, colleagues who are also loved ones, I suppose, in some cases, and really looking forward to getting back to my friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time, and imagine a lot of the British public are too.
The event comes as the UK has been the worst hit nation with a pandemic across Europe. The country saw a staggering number of infections and deaths for months. This prompted authorities to impose restrictions in an effort to bring the pandemic under control. Japanese Olympics organizers have unveiled the game's iconic rings on top of Mount Takara, a popular tourist spot in the west of the Japanese capital, Tokyo. The unveiling of the rings comes as athletes around the world are ramping up training some 100 days ahead of the international event. The sad side of the story, however, is that the spectators are barred this time to accompany the organizers to mark and celebrate it. This is because uncertainties still exist over how and even whether or not the games will take place. A surge of the coronavirus infections, including in Japan, is playing havoc with preparations ahead of the Olympics. Many hope mass vaccinations would help hold the event. Suppose you have run out of milk and you're not in the mood to shop for shopping. This is for you. Robots are lending a hand with grocery shopping in Singapore. A technology company has deployed two robots to a neighborhood for a trial period. Both named Camilo, the machines deliver items from nearby supermarkets and online shops to around 700 households. Designers say people tend to use robots in the pandemic era.
Especially during this pandemic period, everybody is looking at, you know, contactless, humanless, because in the robot itself, it has its own disinfection UVC light that we could do disinfection after every trip is being made by itself.
The robots are equipped with sensors and cameras, and they can carry up to 20 kilograms in their compartment. Users can track the robot on its way using a mobile application. The smart machines make 4 or 5 deliveries per day.
section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guzhuao Highway is located in Yichuan City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers. Almost 4.5 kilometers of the highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace the traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
Now, a group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Oretherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. On rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million, 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Río de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of a discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I call it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here, the dazzling Aton. Three main districts, one area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets, pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Hawass says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca. The more technology advances, the more robots are seen in more areas of daily life. Now, Chinese engineers have created robotic pets. A Chinese engineering workshop has made a robotic hound called Alpha Dog. It can navigate its way using sensors and artificial intelligence. Alpha Dog can also adapt to its environment using super fast 5G internet. The robotic dog is incredibly stable and has more balance than a real canine. The developers hope their invention can be used to help disabled people, especially the visually impaired.
We are exploring ways of helping the disabled, especially the visual disabled, to live a better life. When the robot dog has the function of vision, hearing and dialogue too, it can easily interact with disabled people and lead them to the supermarket or the bus.
The robotic pet costs $2,400, despite a relatively high price tag. Over 1,800 Alpha Dogs have been sold. The hound has found favor with a large group of fans, especially children and technology geeks. The developers hope to equip future models with the ability to bark so their product would look more lifelike.
Cheese goes well with food items indeed, especially on the breakfast table in almost every home. But have you ever tested halloumi? The rubbery cheese I'm talking about from Cyprus, which now gets EU-protected status. Halloumi is a traditional homemade item in Cyprus, with historical accounts suggesting its production as early as the 16th century, believe it or not. Now, the salty cheese is the country's second most valuable export. In Turkish, it is known as helim. Europe has now decided to recognize halloumi, called white gold by dairy farmers, as a unique thing to be divided in eastern Mediterranean island there. Locals usually enjoy it tossed in the frying pan or barbecued, eaten raw with melon in the summer, or cubed and thrown into the boiled with soup.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now, all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam Al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
A Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, summoned the Muslims to fulfill the needs of their Muslim brothers. He warned them from leaving them. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, said, "If the servant refrains from helping his Muslim brother and does not strive to fulfill his need, he will be afflicted by the need causing a sin, not a reward. If the servants refrain from spending on that which pleases Allah, then he will be afflicted by spending 100-fold on that which displeases Allah."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's truly a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam on many occasions urged his companions to treat people according to various rules of social conduct, Islamic rules of social conduct. In one conversation with his very famous companion by the name of Abu Hamza, Imam al-Baqir talked about how there are certain things which drive away the tyrant ruler and keeps the Satan away from you. So Abu Hamza was very interested in knowing what this was, and so he asked Imam al-Baqir to tell him what these things are. One of the things that Imam al-Baqir said was to give alms early in the morning. Another thing which Imam al-Baqir told Abu Hamza was that one should love one another for the sake of Allah. If one wants to keep away the tyrant rulers and one wants to keep the Satan, the devil, Iblis, Shaitan, away from themselves, then they need to help each other with good deeds. Imam al-Baqir says, "For such good deeds put an end to Satan and the oppressive rulers." And of course, dear friends, here it makes very much sense, because when one does good deeds, not just as an individual, but as a society and as a community and eventually as a country, all of these countries together doing good, promoting good, preventing evil, opposing tyranny, ends up creating a beautiful world which we all want to live in. Very beautiful words in this conversation between Abu Hamza and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam in this golden dialogue. Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
We see that our Imams have always emphasized this point of knowledge. They trained their Sahaba in different subjects. They actually encouraged the Sahaba and the Shias to seek knowledge. They were pleased in seeing their followers reaching to the higher levels of knowledge. And if you look at the examples that we have, just, you know, three or four examples from the Sahaba. One is Aban bin Taghlib, or Taghlib, two different ways of, you know, calling him his name. Aban had the, you know, the opportunity to study under the fourth Imam, the fifth Imam, and the sixth Imam. He became expert in tafsir, in hadith, even in laws, to the extent that although he was not a resident of Medina, but sometimes he would come for an extended stay in Medina, our fifth Imam once told him that I would like to see you sitting in Masjid al-Nabi in Medina giving fatwas. You know, those people who go around talking against ijtihad in the name of akhbariyat or in the name of vilayat of the Ahlul Bayt. Oh, you know, these ulamas are all, we discard them. We just follow the Imam of the time. How do you follow the Imam of the time? You know, you look at the time of the fifth Imam. He is there, alive, accessible to the people in Medina, but he has a companion who has learned and reached to a level that Imam says, I like to see you sitting in Masjid al-Nabi in my own town giving fatwa. And not only that, the words he used for him, he says, Inni uhibbu an yaram nas amsaluka bayna shi'atina. I would love a situation that people will see people like you among my Shias. So it's not only Aban bin Taghlib. Imam wants to see many more Shias becoming like Aban bin Taghlib. And so this is a point where we had to realize that, you know, our Imams are Imams of Ilm. They are the Imams who always promoted seeking knowledge and advancing in various fields. We are not only talking about religious studies. As a Shia, as a follower of Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, it is the duty of us to go in different fields. And in whatever field that we choose, we have to reach to the highest level. Let us excel. This is the expectation that the Imams have from their Shias at all the times.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The month of Allah presents Ahkam, Islamic Commandments of Fasting by Hujjatul Islam Khakdaman.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, I'm very happy to be again with you with our second episode in our program, which is called Month of Allah. And I'll be continuing to explain about the Ahkam, specifically about this holy month. Previously, I talked about the intention in fasting, which is really important. But right now, I'm going to start with the first thing that we need to really care about, we need to regard, and that's not eating and not drinking, which is regarded as those kind of activities that break your fasting. It is really popular, you know, if you ask anybody about fasting, they know that eating and drinking is forbidden in that period of time. But there are a couple of specific things and details about this matter of eating and drinking that need to be said. The important thing is anything which is regarded normally and regularly by the people that they eat or drink, you should not have that. Or things that are not regularly eaten, like dust, like soil, like anything. If it comes to your, to the, you know, area of your mouth, and if you swallow it, it breaks your fasting. So the first point, which is important, is anything that is regularly eaten or irregularly, it's not important. All of it just breaks your fast. The second thing is that period of fasting, you know, from Adhan to Adhan, a couple of hours, you need to have your fast on. The important thing is a couple of minutes before the Adhan of the morning and a couple of minutes after the Adhan of the Maghrib, we need to stop eating and drinking, and after that we can start. Why? Because we need to be sure, this is one of the important ahkam, we need to be sure that in this period, all of this period, we have not eaten and we have not drunk anything. To be sure, we need to stop doing that and prevent ourselves from eating and drinking a couple of minutes before and a couple of minutes after. The second thing is sometimes, you know, it happens to people that, you know, unintentionally, they just do something. For example, the morning has started, the Adhan has started, but a person is continuing to eat. And at that, you know, moment, suddenly he understands that, he or she understands that, okay, Adhan has started. If that moment happens for you, you need to take out that piece of food in your mouth or anything that you are eating. You need to take it out, for example, after that, wash your hand and start your fasting. Because it has happened unintentionally. You have not been aware of that. You have not been aware of the fact that Adhan has started. But if you are aware, then your fast is not validated. It's in Arabic, like in the language of Deen, we say it's batil. It's not validated, so it breaks it. The second thing, the third thing, which is really important and happens so much for the people, is that the fact that after eating something, some parts of that remains, you know, lodged between our teeth or on your gum, for example, or some part of your mouth. And it, you know, drives some people to obsession. The fact that they need to wash their mouth is so much, or pick a, you know, toothpick and try to take all of those little pieces of, you know, food in your mouth out. It's not necessary, it's not obligatory to, you know, put every piece of food between your mouth or in your, you know, on your gum, between your teeth, out of your mouth. It's not necessary to do that. It's not obligatory. But if somebody is sure that if you don't use, you know, the toothbrush, if you don't use the toothpick, that amount of food is going to come down your mouth, and it's going to happen. You're going to swallow it. Then you need to absolutely wash your mouth. You need to absolutely use your toothbrush. But otherwise, no, it's not necessary, because a lot of times it happens that those little pieces of, you know, food between your teeth, it just stays there up to the Adhan of Maghrib. And after that, you break your fast, it's normal. So don't let it, you know, get you into the obsession area, which is really bothering. Thank you very much, and be with us. We're going to continue.
rules America.
Part 6.
No series about who rules America can leave out Wall Street's financial clout. We've left its impact for last, secure in the knowledge that in today's America, this financial district is a key power center, a hub for the financialization of an economy in which the control of big money is often central to the control of politics and society. We have spoken with a respected corporate executive who told us point blank that the rich now rule America.
My personal opinion is a large part of what's happening economically is due to basically globalization and digitization of business. That can't be stopped.
Professor Stanley Aronowitz quotes the famous sociologist C. Wright Mills on the same theme from 50 years ago.
Wall Street, the financial sector, is the leading edge of corporate capital. And it was the leading edge of corporate capital in the mid-50s. Of course, today it's much more accentuated because of the relative decline of industrial corporations.
Many Americans see all this as a conspiracy by an unaccountable secret cabal that operates like a power center beyond democratic control. The internet is filled with videos about shadowy billionaires and their plots to control everything.
Which is ongoing right now. It is a conspiracy of institutional corruption from the highest level.
From international bankers to the super rich, from Washington to Rome, they're all in it together.
And when is Wall Street a conspiracy? And what role does it play in who rules America? Is it an outside job or an inside job?
It's not a matter of elites outside the state, although, of course, they have enormous influence. But the reason they have enormous influence is because the state is structured to be reproducing their power and authority in the society.
Leo Panitch, he's an economist and analyst, and I think he offered a perspective that we really haven't heard before. He's sort of fighting against the conspiratorial idea, you know, that there's a small group of people in a room somewhere running things. He's talking about the structure of the society, the values of it, who really runs things.
Wall Street is not only a place, it's an industry with thousands of interconnected firms that call themselves a financial services industry. But they are much more than that. They are deeply involved with how our country is run, says Robert Weissman, the head of the public interest group, Public Citizen.
Well, you can't understand what's happened in the country in the last 30 years in terms of economic policy, and really the way the country's evolved politically, without understanding how Wall Street has grown in power. It's grown in economic power, and it's grown in political power, and that's been synergistic. They use their political power to wipe out a whole range of regulations that control them.
In the past, investors would buy stocks in real companies and industries that generated jobs, provided services, or created products of value. Those days are gone.
They became a bigger and bigger portion of the economy.
Then we went from an economy of production, making things, to one based on consumption, buying and selling things. Consumers soon drove 70% of the economy as banks, private equity companies, and hedge funds grew in size.
As they became a bigger portion of the economy, they were able to leverage more and more political power in a really horrible cycle for the functioning of democracy. And what that led us up to, of course, was the crash in 2008.
So consumers went deeper and deeper into debt. And then bankers bought and sold debt while they changed the rules regulating their activities.
A whole series of deregulatory moves that had been enabled by the influence, the political influence of Wall Street, led to the actual functioning of the economy to be a disaster.
Because as billionaire investor George Soros told me years ago, the capitalist economy is also inherently unstable and prone to bubbles and crashes.
I've worked with the theory that financial markets are inherently unstable. And to prevent excesses, you need some kind of intervention, supervision, regulation. Unfortunately, the prevailing idea is that markets tend towards equilibrium. And so we work with a false concept of how financial markets operate.
We were told by someone, for example, that the beauty of globalization is that no one is in control.
Well, there is a great advantage in that because controls have their own problems. In fact, markets are much more efficient than centralized controls. But it doesn't mean that there should be absolutely no control. And in fact, if you look at reality, ever since you've had capitalism and ever since you've had financial markets, you have had crises. And each time there was a crisis, there was something done to prevent a recurrence.
The problem this time is the dramatic surge in debt. Chart showing the debt of the United States, page after page, illustrating how much money is owed. It's mind-boggling. It gets even more complicated when you start talking about new financial instruments like derivatives that have turned the industry into a global casino. Derivatives can also be used as insurance, betting that a loan will or won't default before a given date. They become the basis of a big betting system, like in a casino. Financial journalist Max Keiser says just a handful of big financial firms now dominate the industry and the global economy.
Without a doubt, there's J.P. Morgan, which is in bed with the Fed and some central banking system.
Wall Street bets on future values and the performance of practically everything of value.
So you've got Morgan, Goldman Sachs are the two primary players in this global financialized world.
Soon, CEOs, financiers, and executives of a small number of investment banks and hedge funds became rich and powerful by controlling specialized high-stakes markets.
They are connected to the central banking system, which is the Fed, the ECB. The Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland is kind of the central bank of the central banks. And these are the folks that are keeping, their main purpose at this point is to keep interest rates as close to zero as possible, to make it as cheap as possible for people who are borrowing money to speculate, to be able to speculate freely without having to pay for the money that they're borrowing to speculate.
Even if these financial markets are supposedly open to all, a relatively few traders, investors, and asset managers came to structure the markets to increase their own wealth and power.
And if they ever make a bad bet, then they quickly move to cover their bad bets with austerity programs or some kind of bailout program or a quantitative easing program.
A Swiss study by physicists on the ownership and control of stock exchanges in 48 countries examined 24,877 stocks and 106,141 shareholding entities. To their amazement, they found that just 10 companies were dominating all stock ownership. Here they are.
When we talk about money and we talk about Wall Street, we have to ask this question: where does the money come from that's used in the speculation in our financial markets? This man knows, Barry James Dyke. He's an asset manager, and he works with clients. So where does it come from?
The money comes from people's savings, regular savings, people's retirement funds, which is saving for retirement.
But do the people who put their money into these accounts know how it's being invested or spent?
They don't have a clue.
It's only now, as a result of the financial crisis, that the public is learning slowly that the self-styled masters of the universe on Wall Street speculated on risky investments and created a crash. Graydon Carter, the editor of Vanity Fair, wrote, "It can fairly be said that the chain of catastrophic bets made over the past decade by a few hundred bankers may well turn out to be the greatest nonviolent crime against humanity in history. They brought the world's economy to its knees, lost tens of millions of people their jobs and their homes, and crashed the retirement plans of a generation. And they could drive an estimated 200 million people worldwide